Okay, right. So we do have a competition running at the moment. We're inviting you to nominate someone who is very special and to tell us why, and why they're deserving of a Cadbury Secret Santa bar. And if you're successful, they get the bar and you get a beautiful hamper, which I might try and get down to you either today or tomorrow so you can have a look at it. Just a couple of the entrants so far. And just because I read them out, by the way, it doesn't mean they aren't successful. The Cadbury competition, I would like to recommend and put forward Dr. Blank from Letterkenny University Hospital. He's looked after me for a good number of years. I could not rate him highly enough, and I'm very grateful to him. Thanks, Marie. Hi, I'd nominate my beautiful wee mum, Blank. She's 93. She had COVID twice. The heart of our family. We love her to the moon and back. Mum is a heart of gold, always good to everyone. And on it goes. So you're a contender as well. Greg, I think my wife, Blank, should get the Secret Santa chocolate bar because she puts everybody first and leaves herself out all of the time. Another here, I nominate my daughter, who will not be home for Christmas. She's nursing and on duty Christmas Day. Thank you. She's doing great work, but it must be very tough for you as a parent. And last for now, I'd love to send a Secret Santa to a beautiful lady in Dublin who really helped me through my cancer treatment in St. Luke's. Even though she was going through the same treatment, this was in the past 2 years, would love to give her something back. Thank you for that. As I say, yes, they're all in the running. The nominator will win a beautiful Cadbury hamper and will send off a Secret Santa bar to the person who is successfully nominated. So that's thanks to our friends at Cadbury. Okay, we're joined in studio now by Amir Gamil. Good morning to you, Amir. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Hi,
it's good to have you with us. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Good to be here. Thank you.
Right. The Muslim community in Donegal is seeking planning permission for a new cultural centre to be located on a greenfield site at Lisnennan in Letterkenny. So what is the function of this centre and how advanced are the plans, Amir?
Right. Well, the function of the centre is really just to provide us a place that we sorely need for the community in terms of, you know, just a place to be for all of our activities and stuff like that. And the planning application, what was the question? How advanced is it?
Yeah, it's the planning application.
Yeah, so, well, it's quite advanced in that it's been lodged. So we're looking forward to see what happens next. I guess we hear back from the council within the next 7 to 8 weeks, I guess.
Currently, the community gather at the former offices of the Donegal News at the junction of High Road and Ard O'Donnell for your workshops and meetings. And I presume that serves its purpose, but that's not the long term.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, it's good to have that place. We're very happy to have it because, you know, even in this short term, it was absolutely sorely needed. We've been looking for a place for a while and it was really good to get it. It's satisfying our needs at the moment. But even now, the numbers are a bit too much for that place. So we're having to sort of like, you know, split certain sessions over two sessions and things like that. And then also in terms of just like the other activities that we want to do. So it's great to have it, and it's providing, you know, like a very good use and function for the community.
But we have to look to the future and the needs of the community, which
exactly.
I presume is growing.
Of course it's growing. Yeah, exactly. It's growing all the time. And then in terms of like just, you know, being able to have like the kind of activities like recreational activities, and you know things like a library and stuff like that,
and a prayer hall as well.
Well, a prayer hall. Obviously, the prayer hall is one of the main functions of it. Obviously, we're using the location, the High Road, as mainly for prayers and other activities, and it's doing okay. But again, we'd like a bigger prayer hall.
How often is a member of the community likely to gather for prayer? I mean, obviously there's different... See, I think people don't realise it's the same with all religions. There are some people who are very, very devout, others who are a bit more passive, and others who maybe don't practice a religion at all. So
yep.
I think there's this presumption, or maybe it is the case, I doubt it, that every Muslim person... is an incredible strong follower of the religion. I presume that's not the case. There's different groups within,
of course,
like every society.
Like any religion, of course, you have many degrees. Yeah. As you said, from the extremely devout to, you know, people who don't care, I guess. But I think generally speaking, I think the vast majority of Muslims will attend prayers on the Friday, which is sort of like our holy day. It's kind of like our Sunday. And so, like, you know, we gather there for Friday prayers at lunchtime, and that's where you see, like, the greatest numbers. So it's like a, you know, requirement that people, you know, attend, you know, congregational prayer on a Friday afternoon. And, you know, thankfully, you know, most people do tend to attend that. And then in general, Muslims are, we believe that we're required to pray to God five times a day. So, you know, I think it's probably true to say that most Muslims would pray five times a day. And then, you know, some might pray in, you know, the center. You know, those five daily prayers, you know, we're holding the five daily prayers in there each day. And then some might pray it at home or at work, just kind of depending where they are at the time when it's time to pray.
Yeah. And has there been much resistance to this move? You know, not necessarily through the planning process, which mm-hmm. is there and set in stone, and people can, people have to, you know, people have a process to go through if they want to oppose anything and give good reasons as to why, and they have to be reasons, specific reasons. But have you had any pushback with the current sort of, I don't know, the way life seems to be right across the world now, where, you know, people are resisting this, they're seeing as a, I don't know, I think I saw someone comments on someone's news post about a takeover or something along those lines. Are you getting any of that?
Thankfully, it's been very good, I would say. I mean, of course, there's the odd little bit of, you know, negativity here and there, but I think...
Don't amplify that either. You would believe it to be the minority, absolute minority.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, by and large, the vast majority of people are very welcoming and friendly and, you know, reasonable and peaceful, which is great because, you know, we just all, you know, all want to live in peace and we all want to get along with each other. So, yeah, thankfully, mostly it's been good.
And Amir, will this be pardon my ignorance, is this a purpose-built building or is it adapting a current building?
So the planning for the new site at Lisnennen is going to be purpose-built. Okay. So there's going to be hopefully two buildings. So there's going to be like the main building where we'll have like all of the main functions and in terms of things like, you know, like prayer hall and library and, you know, bathrooms, coffee dock, offices, stuff like that. And then there's going to be like an ancillary building where we're going to have like, you know, recreational activities. So, you know, sports and, you know, cultural and social, you know, get-togethers and all that kind of stuff. Parent and toddler group, which we are already going to be running in the High Road office. Mm-hmm. But obviously this new location will allow us to run a parent and toddler group, not just for the Muslim community, but open to everybody. And mm-hmm. that's another opportunity, again, for everybody to kind of integrate and get to know each other.
Yeah, I mean, listen, depending on your background, there are going to be certain things that are specific to your background and that you will, will enjoy and do with other people of that similar background. But it is important, isn't it, though, that we all live in the community together and absolutely. There's as much crossover and integration as is possible because history has shown what happens when we don't do that. And when I say we, I don't mean you, I mean any of us
right.
with different backgrounds, different cultures, you know, different race, different religions. The more we do things separately, whilst some things are always going to be separate, I think sometimes the more difficult it is to truly live together and with each other.
Absolutely, yeah. And we're big believers in that. We absolutely want to have that kind of integration. So as I said, like the parent and toddler group is one example. We've also had like, you know, events in the past where we did like what we call the fasting challenge, if you remember, during you know, Ramadan, which we need to make sure that we get you in for the next one.
I could get on board with that.
Yeah,
think,
yeah.
At this stage.
Yeah, yeah.
For my winter weight. It's nothing on you.
Well, no. Well, you know, I hide it well with my clothes, you know. Yeah. But
I need to see your tailor. But go on.
But anyway, but yeah. So you know, in things like that as well, we sort of like invite, you know, people from the wider community, you know, from the non-Muslim community to come and break their fast with us. So we're big believers in that because, as you say, the only way to really, you know, live peacefully together is to live really with each other and interact with each other.
I think it's when any fears or misconceptions are dispelled. Mm-hmm. Because I think those who want to divide us often focus on what we might fear most about each other.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
100%.
Right,
I mean,
so yeah. If I'm told that you're a big bad wolf, but I don't know you.
Yeah. And you're more likely to believe it.
Of course I am.
That's it, yeah, exactly. 100%.
Do you know what I mean? It's really, it's really that basic.
Oh, it really is that basic, yeah.
Like I mean, put a load of different kids from all different backgrounds in first year national school. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might say, well, why, you know, why are you whiter than me or why are you browner than me? But beyond that,
yeah,
there is nothing planted in their heads that for them to see each other as different.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. That's you know, I often think about that, actually, that sort of the innocence of children and how they just, you know, and just interact with people and just see each other just as other kids, you know,
simply don't know any difference.
Yeah, that's it. So absolutely. You're right. You know, when people it's natural for people to be afraid of the unknown. And then, as you say, some people like to capitalize on that.
Mm. I like rationale. I think rationale is really good in everything in life. If you try and look at things rationally, you know, be it a fear, it could be a fear of flying, or it could be a fear of whatever your fears or whatever it might be. And even things that are very positive in your life, because sometimes you can get overexcited about things. I just think if we try and employ rationale, It does really help.
Absolutely.
So it's my emotion, a rational emotion. Absolutely. Amir, is there of the Muslim community, is there a particular area that they're working in more so in Donegal or elsewhere? Like, what is it? I mean, obviously, you know, employment is often what's a driver of where we go in our lives.
Yes.
We know that as Irish people to build, we move to London, we move to Scotland, you know, to America, to Australia. Mm-hmm. We're drawn out there for nursing or teaching, and it's the same with Dubai and the UAE. Is there a particular area of society that you're more likely to see a Muslim person working?
Yeah. Thanks for asking that, actually, because that's a good point. Actually, if you look at, for example, like, you know, you walk into the hospital here, right? You can't turn a corner without seeing a Muslim. Mm-hmm. There's so many Muslims working from all over the world.
It's hundreds, isn't it?
Oh,
easily.
Hundreds of Muslims working in the hospital from all, you know, different nationalities. You know, and it has been that way for many years. Like, it's not, you know, not just recently, but many, many years, you know, not just the hospital here in Letterkenny, but even hospitals all over the country. So certainly the hospital is, you know, where you would see like a lot of the Muslim population. In addition, there's a lot of software engineers and other types of
dentistry,
you know, professionals.
As well, actually.
Dentistry, absolutely.
Is a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, dentistry. Yeah. There's a good few Muslim dentists here. We also have a lot of Muslim business owners that are contributing to the local economy. So you've got, like, you know, restaurants and takeaways and other businesses run by Muslims, you know. So you have, we're a big part of the community here. We provide community services and contribute to the community and the economy and stuff like that. So.
Okay. Well, and why do you, I'm sure we invited you. Why did you want to partake this interview about this development? Is it just to let people know? Is it to sort of say, wow, this is great news? Is it to, I don't know, offset any concerns people might have? Like, why did you think it was important to come in and talk about the development of this facility?
Yeah, well, a little bit of all of that.
Okay.
I suppose it's important that we want the right message to get out there. Because I think from what I've heard, I took some advice, you know, Jason Manford, the Mancurian comedian, and I think he said that his uncle once gave him some advice of, you know, don't read the bottom half of the internet, you know. So I try
to the top third.
Yeah, exactly. So I try to follow that advice, but I've heard that there's like a lot of people sort of, you know, spreading rumors and stuff like that. So just want to kind of take the opportunity to dispel those rumors and just to make sure that everybody knows that that this is just a natural kind of evolution of just our community's need in terms of the space we need. And like I said, it's going to be, you know, a place for everybody to, you know, be together and integrate together and be peaceful together. And
just on that point about, like, I know the mosque tries to sort of frame X as the town square and that everyone has a view and all that kind of stuff. But I actually think the way social media is evolving, that it's becoming a very unattractive place to be.
Yeah.
And even people that I would perhaps feel are like-minded to me, it's just the way things are expressed and the rhetoric. Do you know what I mean? It's just, I'm really finding myself backing out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Heading over to TikTok for my sins, because at least it seems frivolous. They might be reprogramming my brain for all I know. I don't care, but you know what I mean? At least it feels like a little bit of fun at the same time.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah,
I know. All right, Amir. Gamil, is that the correct pronunciation?
Gamil.
Gamil.
Yeah, thank you.
I want to get that correct. Yeah, Amir Gamil of the Donegal Islamic or Muslim Association?
Letterkenny Islamic Association is the official name.
Yeah. Letterkenny Islamic Association. Yeah. Amir Gamil, it's been very nice having you in, and we wish you the best of success going forward. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate that.
And Brendan Devaney, presenter of the DL Debate, joins us now. Brendan, good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
As bad as that potato of a webcam that you used to have was, at least it worked. Now there's nothing.
It's saying I'm videoing. It's on. I don't know. I thought it was you didn't want to see me.
No, it's not that. It's just we're going to have to dig up and get yourself a laptop or something. I don't know what we're going to do. But anyway, we'll batter
Santa,
on. Cause this...
Santa, I'll put it on the wish list.
All right, but if you... I think you might... Well, you are on the good list. But anyway, come here. It's radio. That's all that's important. Okay. Satanta, their intermediate Ulster hurling title victory on Saturday. What an amazing result for the club and the county.
Yeah, listen, Greg, absolutely phenomenal. You know, Donegal hurling, as we say, is... been on the rise in many ways and at county level, but club level, Satanta just say making history and though having won the junior last year, they've done every game in the Ulster as underdogs, you know, starting with Ballinastreen and then Middleton and Carrickmore, and all these teams have been on the round. This title, they all had designs and won this title. So Satanta were like by far the most inexperienced side in the group, so they come through each phase in a late Sean Ward goal was the clincher. So phenomenal stuff, brilliant for them. I mean, to get into this level now, they're facing up the Leinster champions now in an All-Ireland semi in a few weeks' time. But for now, great scenes in the cross. So I've been texting a few of the backroom boys, the management and that, just to see who can come on tonight. So I'd say it'll be high spirits.
Indeed, and Mickey McCann's on the show as well. It'll be interesting to get his insight as the Donegal hurling boss.
Yeah, exactly. He was doing some work for us at the weekend there. And listen, he's got obviously a brilliant hurling brain, and give us a bit of a different take on it in terms of the overall picture of what that means to Donegal Club hurling. So always great to chat to Mickey. And, again, what a servant he's been like. So, I mean, it's a brilliant news story. We've had many attempts at Ulster glory this season, but listen, Satanta's the team that's went and did it. So, I mean, absolutely, they deserve so much respect for this history-making victory.
Yeah, whilst we have no Donegal involvement, still a lot of people interested in what's happening in football terms, and you'll be joined by Neil Loughlin from the Irish News. Look forward to... next week's final between Scotstown and Glenmahera, which has the makings of being a cracker.
Yeah, I think the Ulster Championship, you know, just looking to get an overview with now that we don't have our own teams in it, and seeing Eve Connell coming so close against Glen in the previous game, and almost all the games there have come down to a point or draws, or there's been very few that haven't gone down the wire. So it's such a madly competitive competition. Ulster Club is loved, and I think even from everybody around the country, there's such an interest in it compared with other championships because things are so tight. And again, Greg, you can't imagine this game coming down to anything but a point. So it's always great to chat to Neil just about the overall competition, and of course leading into this final, Glen are Ulster champions already. You know, what a club on the rise. It's only a couple of seasons ago they won their first championship in Derry. Here they are. They've played an All-Ireland club final last season. They're potentially back-to-back Ulster champions. So it just shows you what can happen, Greg, with clubs when the right work's put in. The fruits can be bared. But listen, Scotstown are there in merit. They put out, I suppose, the other main favourites, Kilcoo, as well. And they came through a tight tussle there with Thrillick as well. So now they're on there as merit. That's a very hard game to call. Mm. It's a 50-50 like most of the games around Ulster that have gone before.
Yep, it's a show not to be missed, of course. Live just after 7 p.m. You can listen then to the DL Debate as a podcast, live or on demand. It's all in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. And such is the way the football calendar is now. It's the last show of 2023. There's just a couple of Mondays before we are into January 2024 then. And it's starting to look forward to again. It's hard to believe, isn't it? It's like Donegal's interest in competitive football only just really concluded, and hurling still to come, of course. But we're already then. What will your focus be in January, Bren? Are we starting to look at the second coming of the Jim McGuinness era?
Well, funny you mention that. I have a special interview lined up with the man himself, Jimmy McGuinness. Yeah, my first show will be myself and Jim talking about the season coming up ahead. So that'll get us off to a good start, Greg. So, yeah, listen, it's going to be a fascinating season next season. You know, you obviously the lads are all training away, and the fitness and the commitment now has gone up and up. And I think with Jim coming in now, there'll be such a buzz with Donegal again, particularly after the turmoil of last year. Funny again, just talking about even the likes of, you know, we mentioned about the turning Glenn's fortune and how quickly things can change in county. You know, it all seems doom and gloom, and then all of a sudden going into this year, who knows what can happen this year. But certainly Jim and the team he's assembled there, you straight away of the buy-in of everybody. I mean, in terms of the county's been trawled over again in terms of talent and who's going to join the squad. But, you know, last year we obviously were missing players, and you know that certainly is not going to be the case this year. And the team's heading to Tenerife now for a bit of a training camp. Tenerife sounds great, Greg, I think, for everybody listening. But if you're running up sand dunes at 6 o'clock in the morning,
it's not sandy either. It's that black gritty stuff.
It might be as nice as it sounds.
Well, it's not a sand dune I ever ran up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I maybe tumbled down one or two. But Brent, without spoiling the interview, and I'm sure you've done it, it is going to be a fascinating season, and maybe not even referencing the interview, but just knowing Jim McGuinness as a person, right? The expectation is huge. You know, people sort of talk about, you know, we need to manage our expectations. There's a building process. Balls for the majority of fans out there, right? We're fascinated to see what can be delivered from the get-go. Is Jim McGuinness the type of person that is aware of that might put any pressure on it? Or is he the type of person that's focused? He's got a plan, he's got a job, and that's what he's going to do. And what happens sort of external to that is almost not irrelevant, like he doesn't care, but not part of the plan. Like, what kind of a person is he? What will his approach be heading into the league, the friendlies, the league, and the championship, I wonder?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't think it would bother him at all, because I think he's very confident and has been, even from the first time he took the job, that he was going to deliver what he can. Now, can you just say, listen, you can never say we're going to win also championship or we're going to win all. You can never actually say that. But what you can do is get the very best out of your players and be tactically aware, and your fitness and your, I suppose, your attitude and your composure and all those things that go into you making you the best team. And then after that, Greg, it's really down to the small margins. And if you look, I suppose, first of all, we're in Division 2. You want to at least... people want to come out of Division 2, but then you've got a very tough balancing act between coming into that on the right level, because you're going to have a very tough Ulster Championship, starting off with Derry straight away, and then, you know, going into the All-Ireland group stages. So there's a lot to marry, but you've got to be careful in that Division 2, because, listen, there's no one that's just going to roll over. Mm. And, of course, the bottom couple of sides in that could end up in that Talton Cup. So first and foremost, is you want to stay up the higher side of Division 2, hopefully get... promoted, and then you're right on the Ulster Championship game. So I think for Jim, the pressure wouldn't be on him in terms of the success, because it's like the work and his application is what he needs to do, and then it's up to the players on the pitch to carry that out. But Greg, no more than the Ulster Championship there and the club, you know, you're going to come down to the finest margins. I mean, the backstory of...
Yeah, but that's what you want Jim McGuinness to bring, isn't it? It's that 5%. And you know, like, Donegal fans are incredibly loyal and they stick by the team and what have you. But there is, you know, there has to be a relationship between the team, the management and the fans as well. I think they're all intertwined. And I'm not saying that's not there or what have you. But I do believe that's an important part. We would on this show, sort of when, you know, the fans' heads are down, games that no one would go to, they're going to stuff it, I can't be bothered. You know, I think there's hopefully that strength of relationship will be fully re-established next year.
Yeah. And listen, Greg, it's a good point, because I think it's very much changed, say, from our day there. We would have won an odd couple of games and then there'd be a big fall. You know, you might lose a big final in it and we wouldn't play well in it. I think the difference is now is we know what level of performance we're going to get from Donegal. Now, as you said, there might be small percentages in that or a bit of magic in a game, but the game's very much changed, that everybody plays to a certain level. The top teams are all at a certain level, and that's why you see, even going into last year's games, you know, the likes of the semi-finals, with, you know, with Derry were there and Monaghan were there. You know, there's not much in it then against teams that are supposed to beat them, because the game has got so much tactical now, and teams are so well set up that no one kind of gets that kind of hammering or the game kind of going against them. You rarely see it. So that's why even for Donegal going into this, and if you look at, as I say, how far on Derry have come, and the likes of Monaghan from last year, and obviously you have Tyrone, Armagh improvement. There's so much, I suppose, intrigue in Ulster. So it's going to be a difficult proposition. But I think, as you're on about, what the fans think, I think they're going to be just fully behind the team. And as I say, it doesn't really now come down to any pressure on Jim, because he's going to bring all his expertise and brilliance that he has. And it'll be interesting, Greg, that's, you know, 10 years ago now. So how has he evolved on as what he's seen as well? So will we see some different tactics from Donegal? It's all going to be fascinating to see.
Exactly. And who's to say what percentage Jim being in charge adds to the opposition as well, because of his status and reputation. It's going to be fascinating as always. Brendan, we look forward to tonight's show. Can't wait for 2024. Thanks for chatting to us throughout the year. I'd probably chat to you about something or other between now and the end of the year. I haven't a clue. But either way, thanks very much for coming on and chatting and stuff.
And listen, Greg, thank you as well for every Monday giving the show a bit of advertising.
It's content, Brendan. It's content. And I'm the king of content.
You are the man. You are the man with the master plan. That's it. Cheers.
All right. Take care of yourself, Pete. Thanks very much. That's Brendan Devaney there. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Congratulations to Satanta on Saturday. Not the first team to win the intermediate, though. 2001 was the breakthrough. Check the archives. All right, listen, thank you very much for that. Message in on Revolut to give them a PPS number on my account. All my accounts will be shut down in January. Apparently, it's for tax purposes. I'm a pensioner. What do I do? Well, I can't give you advice that I say follow, right? But Revolut are being required, particularly because they're in the loan market now. So they offer personal loans and what have you. They and mortgages, they are required now to gather their users' PPS numbers. If it's through the Revolut app, you're okay, because that is their secure space. And the reason they're asking you for it is not for any dodgy reasons or whatever. It's because they offer loans and mortgages and what have you now. And because of credit ratings and all that kind of stuff, they need to be track their usage. There's money laundering rules in there as well. So that's why. And they're also now have an Irish IBAN. So they're looking for your PPS number through the app. No problem. If you get any texts or emails, give Revolut a ring. But if it's through your app and it stays within the app and you feel safe and secure, I've had to do it. Many people around me have had to do it. And as I say, it's because of rules and regulations that they have to conform to as well. So my suggestion is, so that you can retain it, is to go ahead and, I don't want to give you, I've said what I've said, and it's up to you what you choose to do now. Okay, back with more shortly. Now, concerns have been expressed at a major reform of driving licences being proposed by the European Commission that would allow teenagers to drive HGVs. The European Transport Safety Council has called for the recommended age for a lorry driving licence in the EU to remain at 21 and the minimum age to drive buses and coaches to be kept at 24. The ETSC, whose members include Ireland's Road Safety Authority, has warned about the dangers of very young motorists being permitted to drive large vehicles. The European Commission has proposed allowing 17-year-olds to begin accompanied training to drive a lorry as part of a road safety package of new legislation governing driving licences in the EU. Ellen Townsend is the European Transport Safety Council Policy Director and is with us now. Good morning to you, Ellen.
Good morning. Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us. So why do you have concerns? I mean, if the testing system is robust enough, surely if you're good enough, you're old enough?
Well, 20,600 road deaths on European Union roads last year, and more than 120,000 seriously injured. One in five of those collisions involve a lorry or a bus. So we're talking about a massive responsibility driving a large, heavy vehicle. So that's our starting point, trying to reduce road deaths and serious injuries. And then, why we are very concerned about it? Well, two things. One is there are these recommended ages for truck and bus drivers. So for truck, it's 21. And there are already 5 countries in the European Union where it is possible to already drive those at 18, but with certain attached conditions. And for those countries where that is possible, we have data showing that these drivers, so the HGV drivers, this is in the case of Germany being a very large country, large population, 18 to 20 year olds caused a much higher number of collisions resulting in personal injury. We're just extremely concerned if this were to be extrapolated to all the European Union. For the moment, this would be an option. The government would have to offer this possibility, but 17 year olds even accompanied
In relation to those statistics that you used in the countries that already allow 18 year olds to drive HGVs under certain conditions, are you saying that we have the statistics of them specifically driving HGVs that shows that more dangerous, or did you throw in figures there about people in that age category driving generally? Sorry, just to be clear, Ellen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a very important point. So we have specific data for the HGV driver set in Germany, but also Poland and Finland, which are real concern. So young drivers for the other category B, the car drivers, are also a big concern. And it's sometimes argued, oh, don't worry, you know, these professional drivers will be within a professional setting. They'll have extra training. But we can see here from this data that they're still higher risk. They're still more involved. And one of the main reasons for this is that the brain development, especially the part that looks at risk, isn't fully developed until, well, between 21 and 24. So all of this points to the much better common sense, I mean, it is common sense as well, road safety approach to say, right, 21 for trucks, 24 for buses, which
I do get you. And in terms of the brain development up to 25 and risk aversion and what have you, but we do allow them to vote. We do, we allow them to go to war. We allow them to, you know, work in many fields. You know, if they're good enough to do all of those things, is it fair to cite brain development to preclude them then from driving at a younger age?
Well, let's go back to why this is actually on the table. So for the moment, there is a massive driver shortage in the European Union. The industry representing these interests are saying we need to improve. Well, we support them on this as well. Now, we need to improve the attractiveness of the sector. And one way would be to reduce the age. And this is where we say no. We fully support improving the attractiveness of the sector. But we think to do this, we need to improve working conditions, wages, to retain the current workers, but also then to attract in new workers. And we just don't think the risk that you would bring in by allowing 17 accompanied and then as of 18 solo.
It kind of comes down to finance. In other words, the general population could be collateral damage to fulfill a requirement because the industry doesn't want to put its hand in its pocket, really. It's a strong argument. A caller says, yes, I get exactly what Ellen is saying, but in Ireland, you can have a 16-year-old with a provisional tractor licence or a full driving tractors at 50 kilometres per hour with 2 trailers on. And you do see that very young people driving on the roads with very heavy loads, almost that would match what we're talking about here.
Well, I'm sorry to say that we would also be very concerned about the risk.
Two wrongs don't make a right, I'm sure. Yeah, that's how you might feel. Yeah, okay. Yeah. We shall see. We're getting a lot of this stuff coming from Europe, and then we have a wee debate about it, and then it disappears. But anyway, I don't know who's picking it up, if it's organisations like yours or the press. But it, we do. You know, there was another one. Can't remember what it was a week or two ago, but here we are. Do you believe this will pass? How? What is the procedure for something like this coming into law in the EU? Actually, quite interesting. I'd be quite interested in this.
So we're right in the thick of it at the moment. We had the Transport Council with the Irish Minister Ryan there this morning. So the Transport Council, EU ministers adopted their position, which includes this possibility this morning. And then there's a vote in the European Parliament on Thursday. So with Irish members of the European Parliament represented, and they'll be saying yay or nay to the different elements. And this is one of the points where there is a different position, and then they have to get together and negotiate, and we hope we'll get a final decision early in the spring.
Yeah, with anything like this, I always find it interesting to note who's lobbying in favour of something and who's lobbying against it. I think often it can be really quite telling. Okay, thank you for your insight. I really do appreciate it. Ellen Townsend, the European Transport Safety Council Policy Director. So a straight up question to you. I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm on the fence here. Do you believe that the minimum age for driving HGVs should be dropped? Do you believe that people under the age of 24 should be allowed to drive buses and coaches? Or do you think it's fair enough to let younger people drive these vehicles? Teenagers driving HGVs, what do you think? Currently, you have to be 21. Would you be okay with 18, 19, 20-year-olds? What say you? Your voice is the most important of all, of course. 086 60 25,000. Right, last, if we close the Cadbury competition for today, we have, okay, listen, we have got so many entries. Someone's going to be selected very shortly. We'll announce the winner. But there's another. The hamper is like this, full of chocolate, right? I'm saying like this as if you can see me. It's massive. The nominator's going to win that. And then there's a beautiful Secret Santa chocolate bar goes out to the nominee. We've got one winner today. We're going to have another Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then the big one, €250, one for all voucher on Friday. So the giving keeps coming. Chief Superintendent Adrian Glacken said there had been just over 1,600 traffic checkpoints set up so far this year, compared to over 2,000 during the same period last year. He was challenged, but Superintendent Glacken said checkpoints are losing their efficacy because of flashing light warnings and social media, saying a checkpoint's only effective for 20 minutes. Now, I'm just going to be honest with you, as a motorist, I would see flashing for speed vans. Often the checkpoints are located in places, no matter how well you're flashed, you'd have to lift that, well, not literally lift the handbrake, but you'd have to do a UE to avoid them. And also, I don't really see much warning on social media anyway. But listen, that's the view of Superintendent Adrian Glacken. He was challenged on his views by Joe Boland, who's the Donegal PPN representative on the Joint Policing Committee. And Joe's accepted our invite onto the show this morning. Hiya, Joe.
How's it going, Greg?
I'm doing all right. So what's your view? Adrian Glacken said there's a reduction in traffic checkpoints. He says they're losing their efficacy because of people flashing and warnings on social media. Do you buy that?
No, I don't. One of the things that he said about the flashlights, as you said there yourself, that most people that do use do flashlights as far as the Go Safe fans, never, very rarely for a Garda car, Garda checkpoint. The second thing he's saying about the efficiency between 15 and 20 minutes, that's I can understand that, but the problem then is, and apparently when they finish the 15 minutes, they go back to base or go somewhere else. They don't have checkpoints anywhere else. So our argument was that surely if it is only 15 minutes at one area, they can go somewhere else for another 15 minutes and then somewhere else for another 15. That would, to us, that would be twofold. It would help people. One, it might reduce the traffic, incidents of traffic, bad behaviour. Secondly, it would also deter potential criminals or burglars from going to an area, because the Gardaí are floating around and they don't know where they're going to be at that particular time.
Can I make a point on that, Joe, if you don't mind? Because I presume what the Gardaí are trying to say is you just don't know when you might see a checkpoint. They could pop up anywhere for 15 or 20 minutes, and then, you know, people will say, well, I better be a good driver then. But the way I think, they're so random and scattered, you never see them. people don't think they could pop anywhere. People think they simply won't pop up and don't adjust their behaviour, or criminals feel that they can run roughshod over Donegal. If the policy is to sort of have them where you simply don't know where they might be, I don't think that's working. I think that's failing, because to be honest with you, I would almost be shocked to see a checkpoint, not fear there might be one there.
Exactly. If you break it down to per day, it's just over 4 checkpoints in the county of Donegal per day. And if you take out of that the checkpoints, which are, I mean, obviously we all see it, Manor Cunningham, Burt, and maybe Ballyshannon, that's 3 out of that 4 every day. So it means that the whole of the county is never covered. I mean, I live in a rural area myself, and I haven't seen a Garda car driving in my area since an incident 3 years ago. And I'm just 2 miles off the main thoroughfares, you know. So they're not going out to the rural areas. Yes, there are a few checkpoints. I mean, I think 1,635, he said, were drug and alcohol-related checkpoints. And there's 1,049, I think it was, for ordinary checkpoints for tax insurance and whatever else behaviour. But they're not been held in the county way. They're held in the big towns like Letterkenny, Buncrana, Ballyshannon, possibly somewhere else, you know. But the rest of the county has not been covered at all. And you'll find, and even in my area, you see a lot of the potential criminal drivers, or whatever you call them, driving in the back roads to avoid the checkpoint that they know is going to be at wherever it is, you know. So they're not in the rural Ireland.
Listen, the only checkpoints I've seen on a Sunday morning are the customs checkpoints. Now, if you want to avoid a customs checkpoint, I can tell you where there's one going to be with a level of regularity. Do you know what I mean? It's not rocket science. And as I say, you know, you might bump into one on a Sunday morning, but that's the only time I've ever seen them. So what did he say in response to that? I'll get to my point, but I want to know what he said in response to that.
I'll be honest, he deferred. He didn't actually answer it. Now, I'm not blaming him or the Gardaí. I know there's only 24 traffic Gardaí in the county. And they're widespread.
I think that's dropped by. I think that's actually dropped by 2 recently as well. I'm not sure if the 24 is the new figure or the old figure, but it's they're down 2 anyway. So,
right. Well, that's you're probably right. So when they can't be everywhere, we understand that. But whenever the Gardaí are out on a tour or a drive around the county or wherever they're going, it wouldn't be a remiss of them to stop for 10 or 15 minutes in different areas. To at least let people know. It also alleviates fear from older people and people who live in rural areas that are isolated.
Yeah, I think the problem, though, when you see the amount of guards we have, how many of them can be on duty at any one time and then take annual leave, sick leave out of it, there's simply not enough guards. The superintendent's hands are probably tied, and maybe he can't say it, and we're not speaking on his behalf, and I don't know what he thinks. But there probably simply isn't the resources to have people walking on the streets, because people want to see guards walking up and down Ballybuffet or Lifford or Letterkenny or wherever it might be. They also want them out in the roads. If you look at the numbers and you look at the spread of the county, they're just simply not there.
No, I agree with you. I mean, the numbers have reduced a lot. And yes, the chief superintendent spoke about that on Friday and said that he submits his submission every year for new recruits to come to Donegal. But I think it was Deputy Pierce Doherty said the last day that only 3 in the last 4 or 5 years are arrived in Donegal, and that there's been looking for transfers. I call on this one part is that I call for all our councillors and our TDs to lobby as well as community people at national level to look at the Gardaí and say, look, we need the resources. Yes, there is a lot in Dublin, the minute, and a lot of issues in Dublin, and the Gardaí have been kept there, but there are a lot of issues all over the county and the country as well that have been forgot about. And not forgot about, but they've been left to the last leg, because nobody's there to support them, and the Gardaí are trying their best. The Gardaí in Donegal are doing great work for what they can do, yes, but there are things that they can do with the numbers they have that'll utilise their time and also maybe make it more secure for the county.
Okay, I think we're all sort of, and I would probably count the senior guards in this, we're all kind of pulling in the same direction. They would love more resources as well. But you're sort of saying, well, can we change how we use the resources that we have? Joe, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Have a good day.
Take care. You too, Joe. That's Joe Bolan, Donegal PPN representative on the Joint Policing Committee. Have you a view on that? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Right, we have our winner of the Secret Santa competition, thanks to our friends at Cadbury. I think that this person deserves the delivery of the Secret Santa bar. My beloved granny, a remarkable woman who recently celebrated her 80th birthday, is truly deserving of the chocolate bar from Highland Radio's competition. Despite reaching this incredible milestone of turning 80, she continues to embody the spirit of selflessness and community engagement. Every month, she organises a quiz for a different charity, demonstrating her unwavering commitment to making a positive impact in the world. Her dedication to community work is awe-inspiring as she remains actively involved in various initiatives. With a family as vast as and loving as hers, consisting of 9 children, 20 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren, her kindness and generosity have touched the lives of many. A small token of appreciation like the chocolate bar would be a sweet acknowledgement for the love and joy she spreads within our family and our broader community. We've probably given it away. It's supposed to be a secret, but if that lady is listening, I wanted to hear it from us as well. So well done. She's going to win a lovely wee gift. But also, for you nominating, you are winning a very luxurious Cadbury hamper. And you know what? Maybe you can bring it round to Granny's and share it with everybody. I think that's what most people will be doing. Anyway, it's a lovely competition. It gives us a chance to tell people why they're important to us. It's back with you tomorrow. It's back with you tomorrow just after... No, it's back with you tomorrow throughout the entire show. Another fantastic hamper to give away. I wanted to mention, by the way, because this time next Monday, the stage will quite literally be set for our amazing Christmas concert. Just 1 week to go. It's in the Mount Errigal Hotel, a beautiful venue. It's on Monday the 11th of December. It starts at 7:30 p.m. The doors open at 7:30 p.m. with the show starting at 8:30. Michael English will be there, John McNichol, Claudia Buckley, David James, Jack Keogh. It's going to be a brilliant night. Tickets are flying out the door. There are a few remaining with tickets only. Get them at the Mount Errigal or online at highlandradio.com in the outlet section. We want to see you there. It's going to be a cracking night. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Have a wonderful day, please, and be safe and happy if you can.